Welcome to the Garden Angelists, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana. We call ourselves Garden Angelists because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. We are also authors and invite you to check out our books, including my book, The 2030-Something Garden Guide, and No Fuss, Down and Dirty Gardening 101 for anyone who wants to grow stuff. Is that a mouthful or what?
It is. And my books, including Potted and Pruned, Homegrown and Handpicked, and Seeded and Sodded, my trilogy of gardening humor. You can ask for any of our books at your favorite bookstore or find them online wherever books are sold.
Speaking of online, you can also find us as the Garden Angelists on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest, and we would love for you to join our Facebook group, the Garden Angelists Garden Club.
And now, let's move on to this week's episode.
I see you have a quote for us, Carol.
I do. The fragrance of flowers spreads only in the direction of the wind, but the goodness of a person spreads in all directions. Attributed to someone whose name is going to be difficult for my Indiana accent to pronounce. Chanakaya?
Or yeah, maybe, or Chanakwa. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's from the 2nd century BCE and 3rd century CE. So he's an ancient teacher from India. And did he actually say this? We don't know. Who knows? But we thought it was a great quote. So we're using it.
Right, because today we're going to talk about a scented flower that is fun to grow in the garden. And we put together the show notes, Dee, and this is danger zone. I want to warn our listeners in advance. Get out your checkbook. You might have some seeds to buy. You want to tell them what the flower is now that I've promoted it so much?
Yeah, it's Nicotiana. Nicotiana sylvestris is the first one we're going to talk about. That's flowering tobacco. It's also known as white shooting stars because it grows really tall, 3 to 5 feet, and it has these, they're called pendant clusters of long-tubed, trumpet-shaped flowers. So guess what insect it attracts?
Butterflies.
Moths. It attracts moths because they're white. So they shine at nighttime and it attracts moths, but also butterflies too because of the long tongues. Long tongues can get down into those blossoms and actually, you know, make more flowers and also make the insect happy.
Yes. And so I'm assuming hummingbirds would hum around it.
Probably so. I would suspect they would. But did you know that its fragrance really gets very, very strong toward evening, which is another hint that it's really to attract moths?
Yes, I knew that. Night flowers. That's a whole nother topic, Dee.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we'll just stick to this. So it's flowering tobacco because it's Nicotiana. And Nicotiana, nicotine, right? And it does have nicotine in it. I used to have this friend. I don't know if it's true or not, but she used to say, her name was Mary Bogle. Hello, Mary, if you're out there. Mary used to say that she used to watch grasshoppers eat it and laugh as they died. But I don't know if that's true or if she was just being ornery, but it does have nicotine. So it is considered poisonous and it is part of the nightshade family.
Yes, nightshade, Solanaceae, which also includes our friends, the petunias, the tomatoes, the peppers, the eggplants, and the potatoes off the top of my head. That's what I think.
Yeah, that was good. Good job. Good job. Often the flowers are trumpet-shaped on Solanaceae, but not always. So I'm not going to go into all of these details, but it is related to Nicotiana tobacum, and that is smoking tobacco. Okay? And some of this information we got from the Missouri Botanical Garden, who we love. Good old Mobot. So
yes.
You don't want to grow tobaccum unless you're wanting to roll your own cigarettes. You want to grow probably sylvestris, which is the one that has kind of a star-shaped flower. There are different colors of it, and there are also different types of Nicotiana. It comes in purples and greens and kind of a pink, and there's a rusty, I guess you could call it a rusty pink. But there's also one of my very favorites, and one of my very favorites is Nicotiana langsdorffi. Have you ever grown it?
Yes, I have, because it has lime green flowers.
It has lime green flowers. It gets really tall. And it also has a very narrow bell-shaped flower with a little bell at the end. And it's native to Brazil. It's very hard to find the seeds, though. You can try Chilterns in the UK, but Florette Flowers also has it. People grow it as a filler in cut flower arrangements, which we thought was kind of funny, because what other aspect is there to this plant?
It's sticky.
It is sticky. When you cut it, it is really sticky. And it's not a lot of fun to arrange in a vase, but it looks really good in a vase, so I can see why people grow it. Also, if you want to learn more about it, Lewis the Plant Geek, who's somebody we know, he grows this flower too, the Langsdorffi, and he wrote a long and beautiful blog post about it that I thought was very interesting. But also Nan Andra, who writes the Hayfield blog, she's an expert in seeds, weird varieties of plants. She's one of my favorite garden writers. She wrote an entire post on Nicotianas she's loved, and she has a cross that she made sort of accidentally, but not exactly, because she grew Nicotiana Langsdorffi next to Nicotiana alata lime green. And so what happened is those two mixed, and when they mixed, she got something that she called a green mix. And then she put it out for a seed exchange, and other people grew it and sent it back. And now it is known as Andra's green mix. And so she selected it, and it's been refined and refined. I have grown that. I've grown Nan's green mix before, and I loved it. And she now has her own Etsy shop, which is why this starts to get dangerous. Right, Carol?
Yes, because I'm probably about ready to click on that Etsy shop and buy some seeds for Nicotiana. These are tiny, tiny seeds, as I recall. Very tiny seeds.
They're extremely tiny. And I always started the plants indoors, except, yeah, I think I grew the white one outdoors, the Sylvestris, before, just direct sowed it. But then I read up some more on it, and everybody's like, don't start your plants inside. And I thought, okay, I won't. I'm just going to throw some seed out there this year. Why not?
Why not, indeed? But I think with this tiny of a seed, I would be tempted to give it a few weeks head start inside in a nice seed mix, planting mix, so that you don't lose those little seedlings. And then I'd prick them out and maybe pot them up where you could put them outside for a little bit.
Which is the way I've always done it. You could also do, if you wanted to direct sow it, you could mix it with some sand. And that way it would spread more evenly and you wouldn't lose the little seeds. The main thing is, if you do it outside, watch for kind of flat leaves that are against the soil, and they will be kind of almost fuzzy looking, gray green. That fuzzy, it's not really fuzzy, but they kind of look fuzzy. And watch for those, and don't accidentally prick them out of your garden, because that would be bad. Also, I noticed on her shop, and this is what really got me going, she has one called Nicotiana tabacum variegatum. And of course, that one has big variegated leaves, and you know I'm all about variegation. Now I want it.
D. I want it now too.
this podcast is
We're in trouble. We are in trouble. And then you have this other one, Nicotiana glauca, called tree tobacco, which grows 6 feet tall.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool, just for weirdness purposes. But I don't have room for weirdness right now. I'm not buying that one.
You're not buying that one, but you do have room for weirdness. So here's the thing. The last time I grew the flowering tobacco, and it has been a couple of years, guess what happened?
I don't know. What happened?
The tobacco hornworms got all over it and defoliated it.
Oh, well, that does happen. So we should probably talk a little bit about tobacco hornworms versus tomato hornworms. Which is also different from other hornworms. Because right. There's a whole classification of worms that are, or caterpillars really, that are hornworms for various moths. And people think that they're all tobacco or tomato. And you really have to do some research on it, because you might be accidentally killing a white line sphinx moth's, caterpillar. And you don't want to do that, because those are beautiful. in the garden. But anyway, I digress.
So the tobacco hornworm, the easiest way to tell it is it has black margins on the white stripes that go around the body and a red horn. And the tomato hornworm has green margins on its white stripe and its horn is blue. And so the way I'm going to remember this, and this is kind of gross, is tobacco hornworms have black lines, like the black lungs that people get when they smoke.
And well, that's gross, but I mean, it works.
And then the tomato hornworm has the green. I don't know. There's nothing to remember there. Just remember the black one's the tobacco.
Okay, so in other words, if you have a great big old hornworm on your flowering tobacco, it's probably a tobacco hornworm, especially if it has black lines on it, right?
Right, right.
And those, if you have a tomato hornworm, if you have a hornworm on your tomatoes that has green lines, it's probably a tomato hornworm. If it's a black line tobacco hornworm, then it just came over and visited your tomatoes and thought it'd eat those too, which who knows if it would or not. I just want to clarify once again that not all hornworms are eating your tomatoes. So not all are bad. The rustic sphinx moth, which I will put a picture, I promise, on our deal today. Well, maybe I'll do the quote today, but then I'll do the other one tomorrow. The rustic sphinx moth caterpillar eats crossvine, for example. Bignonia capriolata, which is a native plant. And I don't know, is it hardy where you live? I think it may only be hardy to zone 6.
It is, I'll call it marginally hardy. It would die down to its roots, like a clematis or something, but you can grow it. And I did have it. It's a vigorous vine and I had it in a spot where you couldn't even really see it. So I got rid of it, but it is a lovely vine.
It's a beautiful vine. It looks a little bit like trumpet vine, but it isn't trumpet vine. Trumpet vine is invasive. Crossvine is beautiful. It's called crossvine because the flower makes a cross. It doesn't, by the way, the sphinx moth, I never had those until I planted crossvine. I now have those and I see them. And actually, I hold some kind of a record. I hold a county record for my county on a bunch of moths, and all because I planted some native plants. So that's just my little, you know, plea for more native plants in your garden.
Well, Dee, we've gone from flowering tobacco and now we got to go buy seeds. And then we've talked about hornworms and gross people out with how to say them. And I find out you have a county record. Congratulations. Good job.
I think I have 3 or 4 county records and they're all moths. And I'm still waiting to see a Luna moth. That's my big goal in life. And someday I'll have a funny story about that. But most of mine are sphinx moth caterpillars. And it's because I've planted their host plant for their caterpillars. So
good
I
job.
Get sphinx moths. Thank you. It means a lot to me because that's why I garden now mostly. That and tomatoes and peppers and eggplant and
so
flowers.
Speaking of... I'm glad you narrowed down to why you garden to plants, which is why I garden plants, plain and simple.
And animals, creatures.
Creatures. But let's talk about vegetables. We have another quote.
Okay, you go for it, oh quote reader.
Show me your garden and I shall tell you what you are by Alfred Austin. That's a good one.
So what would Alfred say I am since I grow everything?
I think Alfred would say that you and I are insane gardeners.
That's true. We knew that. We are insane because we grow it all. So let's talk about the easiest vegetables to grow.
Okay, so I wrote down the easiest vegetables in the world to grow are radishes, green beans, lettuce, peas if you plant them early, and kale.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty close. I would say so. Peas, let me just clarify that I think potted peas that you don't shell are easier to grow in Oklahoma than the shelling peas. Just FYI, people. You can grow shelling peas here. It's just a little harder because we don't get enough rain, and sometimes we go from winter to summer immediately. And the potted peas do a little better. And snow peas do real well, too.
Yeah, the shelling peas grow well. But the problem with shelling peas is it takes forever to get the peas out of the shell. So potted peas, snow peas are easier to fix once you've grown them.
Yes, I think that's true too. Yeah. Okay, and so surprisingly hard to grow for many people are tomatoes. We talk about tomatoes a lot. Tomatoes have a lot of problems, but you know what? You can do it. And this year I'm doing them all in smart pots. And then corn has its challenges. That's for darn sure. And then there's squash. Now, when you're talking about squash, are you talking about winter squash or summer squash or both?
Both. I think the challenge with both of them, they're easy to grow in terms of, you know, you just stick a couple of seeds in the ground. But then those squash bugs and those squash vine borers come and they ruin it for everybody.
And in our case, it's the squash bugs. Yeah, we have much more trouble with them than the borers, although we have trouble with the borers too. And they're just not, let's put it this way. It's a very, I would say all of these crops are very intensive. So the next one is cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower. Well, that's the brassicas. We could also add on Brussels sprouts. Kale is also a brassica, but it's not as hard to grow. But you might want to cover it with cloth.
Yeah, because the problem for cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts is, first of all, they do like cooler weather to grow. And that's why they grow the big mammoth ones up in Alaska. But the other problem is the cabbage butterflies that lay their eggs at the base of these plants, and then the cabbage worms hatch out and crawl up and eat everything. And it's just kind of disgusting at times. So that's why those are a challenge.
Sometimes I just grow cabbage as a trap crop because they love cabbage the mostest. They love it more than kale. So if I give them some cabbage over in the corner, far, far away from the kale, they're more likely to eat it than kale. But anyway, and then the final one you listed, which I think is spot on, is celery. I ain't growing celery.
No. Celery is hard to grow. And if you really want the taste of celery, you can grow celery root, which is the root is what you harvest, and it just looks like a big knotted root. And then you peel it off, and then the root tastes like celery. And it's nice to add to stews and soups and stuff. But celery root is not that hard. But celery, hard.
Or you can just go to the organic grocery store and buy yourself some celery. I almost always have celery in my crisper. I was going to name another one that I think is a little harder than most people think, and that's carrots. It's not that you can't do it, because I have. In fact, I grew some last year. I grew some that were purple, and they were really pretty. It takes a really long time. It takes even longer for parsnips, right?
Right.
And you have to have really, really good friable soil. That's one of those terms we all use, loose soil, to get straight good carrots. I've grown little carrots, you know, little round Romeo. What's that one called? Is it Romeo?
I don't remember.
I think it's called Romeo. It's a little round carrot. I've grown it. But it takes a long time to bulk those babies up. And then sometimes you get, is it called carrot fly?
Yes.
I'm just pulling this one off the top of my head. Yeah, carrot fly gets down there, and then you have little tunneled maggots in your carrots. So I'm not discouraging people from growing carrots. One way to keep from getting carrot fly is don't disturb your carrots. So don't sow them too thick. And I've actually gone in, and when I thin them, I just cut off all the tops in between whatever spacing I want, because you don't want a lot of scent, because that attracts that delightful creature.
Well, so I had a friend, and he had some little kids that they were having a little garden for the kids, and they sowed carrots, and then he found out how hard it is to grow carrots. So his wife went to the store and brought carrots with the tops on them, and then they snuck out there. And they stuck those in the garden. And then the next time the kids went out there, they said, oh, look, carrots. And they pulled them out. And so the kids thought they had grown carrots. That may be the best way.
That's a good one. I don't know. I never was quite that dishonest. I just stuck with really easy stuff like radishes and green beans with my kids and lettuce, because those are all easy. Radishes, I think, are the easiest, especially if you do one of the not so unusual varieties. Watermelon radish is a little harder. You'd have to do more thinning. Yeah. Beets are another one that, do you think beets are easy?
Well, the problem with beets is, like we talked before, that that little seed that you get is actually a cluster of seeds. And so yeah. beets have to be thin to really grow well. So they're not terribly difficult, but they're a little bit more like you don't just plant them and leave them. You've got to thin them out. And it's impossible not to thin them out because that's a seed cluster that you're planting.
So if you're going to grow some, if you're going to try this year, if you're wanting to do cold crops, we suggest start, if you're brand new, start with peas. Those are easy. You just need some pea fencing or something to trellis them up. And then if you want to grow kale, great. Put it in about now in Oklahoma or in a couple of weeks. Radishes will make you feel like you're the best gardener ever. And they're not as peppery in your own garden until it gets hot.
Right. I would agree. But don't start anything in Indiana. It's still January. You're not going to go out there until the middle of March at the earliest.
Here, I do everything middle to end of February for cold crops. But a lot of these things, like kale, honestly, kale and spinach, they actually grow a little better in the fall, if it ever cools down. It's so, you know, gardening is so easy, yet so complicated.
We should just do all we can to make it easy, Dee, because if it sounds complicated, we're never going to get anybody out there.
Oh, we hope you go out there. Or otherwise, this is a big waste of time because Carol and I could just talk on the phone.
Right. Anyway, speaking of making gardening easy, when you were at the Oklahoma Home Show this past weekend speaking, you found somebody who has a very cool new app for gardeners. Tell us about it, Dee.
It's a really cool app, and I was so impressed by these people. It's called the Seed to Spoon app, and it's just a great app for telling you how to grow anything you want to grow. And everything's alphabetical. It has growing guides. It has, I opened it up a little while ago so I could tell you guys all about it. It's just super cool. It's Dale and Carrie Spoonmore, and they have a farm called Seed to Spoon, and it's their own little food farm in their backyard. And I'm not telling anything on Dale. He spoke on this app several times. He usually spoke right after me or right in front of me. And he would tell you that he is on spectrum, which he suffers from some mild autism. And he used to suffer from anxiety and depression. And food helped heal him. And his story is so good. And you can look them up on Seed to Spoon. That's where you can look them up online. But the app itself is called, I think it's also Seed to Spoon. Yeah, From Seed to Spoon. That's what it's called. And so it has growing guides by vegetables. They've teamed up with Burpee HQ, if I'm remembering this correctly. They're also going to have something else called Garden Plus. And Garden Plus, they're working on right now, and it's going to help you with all kinds of information about your own garden and how to keep track of things. And then they have a whole section on pests and beneficials in the current app. So you can look at a glance. You can look up, for example, one of our favorite insects, the ladybug lion, which is the baby ladybug. And you can see that it looks like a really scary thing, but it's a really good thing in your garden. And just everything at a glance, from grasshoppers to groundhogs and leaf-footed bugs and Mexican bean beetles. So if you have any questions, they have it all on here. They also did some videos that are on YouTube too. And bless their hearts, they videoed one of my talks for me. We'll see if I ever have the guts to put it up. And they have some articles on this app. So it's a great app. It's free. I was just really impressed by both of them. And they just wanted to know the best ways to grow foods. And it was just a great deal at the Oklahoma City Home and Garden Show. Oh, for locals too in Oklahoma, Dale is going to be doing some work at the Myriad Garden School. And so I think that's in February, like February 20th. Buy your tickets now. So really impressed.
That does sound impressive. And I looked at the app, and it's really very nice because the information is good, and it's not just good for people in Oklahoma. It's good for anybody that gardens anywhere, because it asks you where you're located, and then it will tell you based on your location when to plant stuff. And so, and it's super simple to use, super simple to use.
So another great way to get your information, and we all have our phones outside with us while we're planting seeds. So you could look up, for example, how deep to plant carrots, or what time of the year should you plant carrots in Oregon, for example. It's just really, really good. I was so impressed.
Yeah, it is impressive. And then the other thing that they have, which is kind of nice too, is if you wanted to get something, they have links to, you can buy stuff, and some of the links will take you to Burpee and some of them will take you to Amazon. But it's really nice. They have links to take you to buy smart pots that you talked about using.
So, yes, and he gave away smart pots during his talk.
Yeah. And that's somewhat how they fund the application development, because it's not inexpensive to develop apps. So buying through their app is a great way to get the stuff that they've used that's tried and true.
Right, because they've teamed up with Burpee, and I suspect they've teamed up also with Smart Pots. But I'll be honest, I didn't ask Dale about that because I was trying to get my stuff on stage as he was trying to get off stage. So we talked quite a bit, but I didn't ask him that particular question. Maybe in the future we could have him on if we ever decide to do that.
Yeah, if we decide to have guests, Dale will be at the top of the list.
And really nice guy.
Good. We will put links to this. Again, that's the From Seed to Spoon app. I'm kind of excited about it. I think even old hats like us can scroll through there and learn quite a bit.
Yeah, because none of us remember everything. You know, we can't remember all of it all the time. And I forget more and more the older I get. So let's move on to our dirt. Our dirt is fun today. I would rub my hands together, but it would drive Carol nuts when she edits.
Yes, don't do that. So the quote is, old wood to burn, old books to read, and old friends to trust.
Are we old friends by now? I think we are.
We are old friends. We've been friends for a long time, Dee.
Long time. Yeah, we have. So what were we going to talk about in our dirt again?
We're going to talk about old gardening books that we like.
Of course
we are. That you can still get.
Yeah, ones that you don't have to search all over the world for. So do I get to pick mine first?
Yes.
You have two. Mine is Theme Gardens by Barbara Damrosch. Barbara Damrosch also wrote The Garden Primer, which is a good book, and it's been reissued. But Theme Gardens was the book that started me planning gardens. I bought it when I was a University of Oklahoma student. I was still living in the dorms. And I had no intention, well, maybe I did have an intention of gardening. I don't know. By then, I grew houseplants, because I grew houseplants from the time I was about 13. So I was across the street from the dorms in this little shopping center, which I don't even know what it's called anymore. But we would go over there, and there was a little gift shop, and this book was in there. And I just want Barbara to know, we've never met, but I wish we would, because she's one of my heroes. This book set me off on gardening, and I still remember a lot of the advice in it. And one of the theme gardens was a butterfly garden. And one of the things she said in it that struck me, and this will be paraphrasing, not a quote, is she said, butterflies like it messy. They like your garden messy. And so I have held on to that, and it gives me a reason to be lazy. But the truth is, they do like it messy, because they like some places to have cover. They like repetition of flowers within your garden. So if you plant milkweed for monarchs, you need to plant it in several different places in your garden, not just one place. They have to keep on the move so nothing eats them like a bird. So Theme Gardens is great. I don't remember. I think there was a rose garden in it. But I don't remember what the other two gardens were, but it was a great book, and I still think about it.
Yeah, I have that book, Dee, and they have a fragrance garden, a colonial garden, a butterfly garden, a moon garden, children's garden, garden of old roses, Zen garden, Shakespeare garden, gray garden, garden of love, hummingbird garden, secret garden, medieval paradise garden, grass garden, Victorian garden, and winter garden.
Okay, so I thought there were only four or five in there. Apparently, there were 25 instead. There you go.
There are 16.
16.
I also have that book.
It's a good book, isn't it?
It's a very good book.
I still go back and read it periodically, just little pieces of it, because the information is still good. Oh, I love your picks. You go next.
So my picks are both books by Cassandra Dance. from 1993. There's Mrs. Green Thumbs, How I Turned a Boring Yard into a Glorious Garden and How You Can Too. And then in 1998, she wrote Mrs. Green Thumb Plows Ahead, 5 Steps to the Drop-Dead Gorgeous Garden of Your Dreams. Mm-hmm. And what I like about this woman is flat out funny. And she brought that humor to her gardening books.
Mm-hmm.
But she started out life, I think, was going to be a comedic actress, was in Second City. And then she always loved gardening. And she got into gardening. She took classes at the New York Botanical Garden. And she helped others garden. She was on the Regis and Kelly show for a while.
Really?
And other morning shows. Yes. And she had a one-woman stage show that was based on the Mrs. Green Thumbs character, which I guess did really well. And here's the ironic part. And I was reading a little, and I thought, oh, I pulled these out. I'm going to start reading them again, and I did. But in the first book, she wrote that her idol was Gertrude Jekyll.
Gertrude Jekyll?
In England.
Uh-huh.
And she just loved how she gardened in all her books and just sucked them up like a sponge. And she said, and this is the ironic part, Gertrude lived to be 89, and she said in her first book that if you want to live a long time, be a gardener. And unfortunately for Sandra, she died much, much, much too young at 55 in 2002 from breast cancer. But all of us old gardeners remember the Cassandra Dance books, Mrs. Green Thumbs, and whenever you mention it to somebody, like, oh, I love those books.
Yeah, I have a post on her. I mentioned her in a post and that she was one of my gardening mentors. She didn't know, but she was. Because one of the things I loved about her was she talked about how she was a laissez-faire composter, and that's the same kind of composter I am. She didn't work at it too hard. And there's a whole, it was either in, was it a Country Gardening that she wrote, or was it in Country Living that she wrote a column? I can't remember. But anyway, her column, there was a whole column devoted to compost that was just funnier than funny. And I was very sad when she passed away, but I can still enjoy her humor. And I think it's interesting that you picked her because all of your garden talks are about humor too, because you're funny.
Yeah. Thanks. But I was never in Second City or anything. I could... could never be as funny as Cassandra Dance. She was one of the great ones. She's very much missed. But
yeah.
Fortunately, she does have the books. And I ran out of time before our episode. I was going to go out to YouTube and see if I could find any videos of her.
I bet you can do that when you do our notes.
I'll do that. So we are about out of time today, but we were going to talk about our goals. You had a goal in life that you talked about earlier.
I did. To see a Luna moth. Luna moths, when they change over from caterpillar to moth, they have no mouth parts. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
From the moment that they turn into a moth, a big, huge, beautiful green moth, they don't eat again.
Really?
Nope. They don't eat again. So I really want to see a Luna moth, and one of my deals to get to do that, they are in Oklahoma. And are, I hear, fairly common, but I've never seen one. So I am going to plant some native something that is the host plant for the Luna moth. Obviously the caterpillar, because the adult can't even eat nectar.
Sometimes I think I shouldn't have a mouth and then I'd stop eating. But anyway.
Yeah. But okay. So what's your goal?
My goal is to someday walk out to my garden and not see a single weed. You know how I'm going to do this?
Well, no, but I hope you tell me.
So I'm going to reclassify all the weeds in my garden as wildflowers or happy unplanned additions or necessary, according to Barbara Damrosch, maybe, to achieve the messy garden that butterflies love. So I'm going to embrace them.
That's my excuse.
I'm not going to go hoeing and pulling. I'm not going to hoe and pull them until they're gone. I'm not going to soak the garden with a bunch of herbicides. It's just, you know what? They're just part of it.
They are part of it, just like insects are part of it. So there you go.
Right. And so if you find a garden that has no weeds, You either have found a garden that has been poisoned to within an inch of its life, or a garden that employs a whole team of gardeners to keep it that way. But my garden's never going to be like that.
Mine either, because the team is Dee and one other lady who comes out every other week.
Very good. Well, that's about it for our show this time, Dee. We want to thank everybody for listening to The Garden Angelist. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us.
And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love a review, a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by others and moves us up according to Apple's algorithm. The whole world runs on algorithms now.
Yes, and be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
It was lovely chatting with all of you over the Garden Gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye.